The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
In our country right now, about 26% would claim no religion. And to give you a sense of a proportion there, when I was a kid, so like in the early 70s, it was about 3% of our country would have claimed no religion. Among younger people, say 30 and younger, it rises to 40%. So it bodes very ill for the future that 40% of our young people would now claim no religion at all. And see, I think that's a recipe for deep suffering. Because when you bracket that part of life, that dimension of life, something very deep in us is not going to be satisfied.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's a great evangelist, great bishop. It's Bishop Robert Barron. And there's something about the way the man talks. I don't know. It's his intelligence, his delivery. He's been given the gift of eloquence. That's really what it is. I mean, there's a certain anointing. They often say St. John Chrysostom, St. Anthony of Padua were these great orators, right? They had this ability to communicate. And I do think it's a gift from the Holy Spirit. I really do. And of course, our bishops, it's part of their ministry, isn't it, to go ahead and to preach and to teach and to go ahead and to, you know, help us be better followers of Christ. I want to talk today, and I want to get you plugged into a website. There's a great resource out there. They're continuing to grow. Not everybody knows about them. They're called The Pillar, and I've had Ed Condon on. I've had a number of other people, J.D. Flynn and others, on the program in the past, the kind of visionaries behind this, luminaries. They just did a report. And I think this is really telling. I don't know. Maybe your loved one is away from the faith. Maybe your spouse doesn't go to church. Maybe it's your kids. Maybe it's somebody else that you know. And we're seeing this exodus from the church. I'm not here to be negative or to scare anyone, but they're really, we see the rise of those who have no religious affiliation at all in the country, right? We see that they're called nuns, N-O-N-E-S, as we talk about it all the time. If they were an organized religion, they'd be the second largest one. You take a look at the lack of belief in the Eucharist. You take a look at all these factors that I talk about all the time here. What's going on? What's driving it? What do we need to know? How do we get our loved ones back into the loving embrace of Christ? You know, evaluating where our nation stands when it comes to, you know, what we believe, that has been an ongoing task for a number of organizations. Quite often, you'll see these reports come up. The Pew Research Group, right? Every year, I think they do it, or every couple of years. They're the ones who coined that phrase, the N-O-N-E-S, is the nuns, those who say they have no religious affiliation. We've seen their rise through the last decade or so. I'm really curious, where does it go? Will more people begin to leave the church? And what impact did the COVID have on them? And I was saying this the other day to somebody. I don't know who I was talking to about it, but I thought, you know, the spiritual life, our journey in the spiritual life, it's all about habits, good habits and bad habits, right? If you form good habits, you form virtues, right? If you exercise patience and fortitude and temperance and all these different gifts, right? If you give in to vice, it's very easy to allow that to become a habit. And you see how addictions form. You see all sorts of different things. I think when the lockdown took place and people got out of the habit of going to Mass on Sunday, right? When the restrictions were lifted, suddenly you saw churches half full of that, right? People weren't coming back. You see what happens to your kids when they go off to college. And when they're out of the habit of going to church with you, and they're on their own, suddenly they no longer go to church. And I know there's other factors. There's a lot of ideological indoctrination that happens in college campuses, and there's other factors that. But once you get away, once you begin to form these bad habits, it's really easy to see them continue. And I'm just curious, after the pandemic, whether that was kind of an accelerant, if you will, on an already existing problem. So you've got the nuns. You know, and that has been a group that has been causing great concern for those in charge of the church. But there are other things going on, I think, that should concern them and you as well. The guys over at The Pillar, they undertook this major study on religious affiliation and belief recently. And it was a thorough study. I looked at it, a couple different reports they had out. They found some fascinating, really interesting results overall. Americans are still religious people, Right. I believe that. I believe that strongly. They found that with around 70% being affiliated with Christianity, including 24% who are Catholic. But 20% of Americans, they say that they are unaffiliated, either as atheists or agnostics or nothing in particular. I often share the story of my brother-in-law, who very openly just says, look, I just don't believe in God. You know, he's a good man. He's a good person. Married a Catholic girl, right? But just doesn't believe in it. Great man, lives without God in his life. And when he dies, he thinks he's no different than roadkill. Those are his words, not mine. He just blinks out. You know, his existence ends. I don't believe that. But you've got atheists, you've got agnostics, you know, people who just have grown tepid, you know, being unaffiliated today. And what this study does, it dives pretty deeply into what people believe. It also measures conversions. I thought we could talk about that today, too. How do we get them back? Here's one stat that I just couldn't get over. Okay? Check this out. Twice as many people have converted to Judaism than have converted to Catholicism. Twice as many have converted to Judaism than have converted to Catholicism. Look, I have respect for all faiths, but we Catholics, we're supposed to be preaching the gospel, right? We're supposed to be preaching the gospel, and it's pretty obvious we're not doing a good job at it, right? We are not doing a good job at it. Here's something else. 32% of people who were surveyed in this representative sample that they have, guess what? They were raised Catholic. But only 24% still consider themselves members of the church. Why is that? What's causing that mindset, that frame of thinking? So that's 8% that we've lost somewhere along the way, and quite a number of those people have made their way to non-denominational or other non-Catholic churches. I'm joined right now by Brendan Hodge. He joins us this afternoon. He's a contributing editor to The Pillar, was responsible actually for this study, and you can find him. And here's their website. Jot this down. You can read all those reports and sign up. I've become a supporter and a member of The Pillar. It's pillarcatholic.com, pillarcatholic.com. Brendan, I am looking forward to talking with you. I read through this study, and I'm delighted to have you on the air with me today. Good afternoon.
Thanks. Great to talk to you.
About a quarter. Let's start with this number. A quarter of the country claims to be Catholic. That's according to your survey. That's a couple percentage points below the numbers that have been showing up for you know, many years in other areas. Let's talk about that figure in particular of more people becoming Jews than becoming Catholic. What's going on? What is it about Judaism, and why are people gravitating either to Judaism or non-denominational churches? And they're leaving the Catholic Church with its majesty, with its sacramental life. What are you finding? What are you reading? What are you seeing?
Yeah, so one of the things that we found is that there's just a huge amount of churn that goes on in religious belief in America. So of the people that we surveyed, fully 28% have changed faith during the course of their life. And that's like speaking broadly. So people who were raised Catholic who now say that they're Protestant, people who were raised Jewish who now say that they're atheists. It's not just moving from United Methodist to Lutheran. So you have a lot of people who are moving from one faith to another, and yet when you look at where they are moving to, Catholicism, on a percent basis, we looked at of all of the Catholics, all the people who describe themselves as Catholic in the U.S., what percentage of them are converts? And the answer is 7% of Catholics are converts, grew up in some other faith. And that is the lowest percent of people who've changed faith of any major faith. So if you look at the group that call themselves just Christian, they don't take the, we gave people the option of choosing Catholic, Christian, other, or Protestant. And a lot of the evangelicals pick the name Christian other instead of Protestant. 36% of that group are converts. You mentioned Jews. 19% of Jews are converts. 42% of those who say that their religion is nothing in particular grew up with some faith and now say that they have no religion in particular. So there are all these people joining these other groups, and yet the number of people joining Catholicism with its mission to evangelize all nations is very small. So clearly there's some kind of a breakdown going on there.
Yeah, I know our bishops are looking at this. I mean, they're certainly concerned about it. And I also think, you know, reflective in this lack of belief in the Eucharist, there must be a correlation between the exodus from the church, too, of people leaving. If we truly believe Jesus was present, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist, as our faith teaches, if it truly was the source and summit of our faith, our churches would be overflowing, and you would not be seeing people leave. You'd see them wanting to become Catholic and enter in. I'm hopeful for the future, Brendan, in this respect. I think in the next couple of years, as the church begins to really once again rekindle that devotion, revitalize the awareness of the gift that we have in the Eucharist, I think we're going to see numbers come back. Where does the sacramental life of the church play in all of this, and how do you think that will impact these numbers?
So the sacramental life appeared to have a really significant impact both in whether people remain Catholic and how actively they practice their faith. So think of sort of the most basic level of participating in your faith. Just do you go to Mass once a week, that 1 hour a week? So when you look at Catholics who as a child were taken to Mass at least once a week, 38% of those people are still going to Mass at least once a week, and 74% are still Catholic. If you look at people who are not taken to Mass once a week, only 12% of them are going to Mass weekly now. So it makes a significant difference whether children are participating in the life of the church. And then as you start to look at the ways in which the faith kind of moves into everyday life, we looked at something kind of so small that it almost seems insignificant, but we looked at do people say grace before meals? So among people who say that when they were growing up, their family said grace before meals, 43% of those people are still Catholic versus families that said that they never said grace before meals. Only 9% of those people are still going to church on a weekly basis. So there's a huge difference between people who are practicing their faith in an active way and people who are not, in whether they still describe themselves as Catholic, and even more so in whether or not they practice their faith. Because one thing that we saw is that, of all the people who call themselves Catholic, only about 40% are going to church on a weekly basis. And so there are a lot of people out there who do still have some kind of a Catholic identity. They call themselves Catholic, but they're not practicing in that active way. And what our survey would suggest is that while they may continue to call themselves Catholic, their children probably will not.
Wow. That's unfortunate. Our guest today, Brendan Hodge, if you want to join us, we're taking a look at a new study on what Americans believe. And if you've got a question, a comment, you want to get in on the conversation, it's 888-914-9149. I know you asked that question. You asked Americans about their doctrinal beliefs, you know, about God, about Jesus, about heaven, hell, about the Bible. What did you find in that? And I'm assuming it varies by generation.
Yeah, it does. It varies by generation, and it varies by faith. So we threw a number of questions out there. The most common belief is the most basic. The question was, do you agree with this statement? I definitely believe in God, even if I sometimes have doubts. And we found that overall, over 70% of Americans agreed with that statement. When you start looking at Christians, I mean, you would think that number would be 100%, but it's not. For Protestants, it's 88%, and for evangelicals. For Catholics, it's 81%. So you have some people who are describing themselves as belonging to a Christian faith, but don't say that they definitely believe in God. They might say, I sometimes believe in God, but other times I don't. Or they might say, I believe in a higher power, but not a personal God. And even among people of no particular faith, I think often we think of the nuns as being almost like agnostics or atheists. 44% of people who said they believed they had no faith in particular still believed in God, and said that they definitely believed in a personal God. So there is kind of broad belief across America, but it varies a great deal by faith.
See, I think that's really telling, though. Organized religion. Right. I mean, a lot of people, they don't discount God. They believe there's a God, but they just don't. They don't need the priest. They don't need, you know, the church, the incense, the sacramental life. I don't understand that disconnect. I really don't. I know in the study you found that, you know, Catholics who went to Mass weekly as children, they're more likely to attend Mass as adults. And there was a Swedish study that was done talking about the impact of fathers and recidivism when it comes to going back. And there's all these different studies that are out there. You know, I know a lot of parents who've, you know, prayed before meals with their kids. They prayed before bed with their kids. They took their kids, sent their kids to Catholic school. They went to Mass. They prayed the rosary. And those kids today, you know, millennials or maybe a little bit older, they're out of the church altogether. What happened? I mean, I don't know if you can even answer that question. It may not be a fair question, but it seems that we're living in a very unique time, and there's always been this fluctuation, but I don't think it has ever accelerated to the rate that we have it right now. What happened with this particular generation? And even when parents have done some of these things that have caused kids to abandon the beauty of our Catholic faith.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we saw here is that we are living in a hostile culture that does pull people away from religious practice. Even when you kind of layer on all these things that make people more likely to practice the faith. And on one hand, I mean, I'm a parent. I've got seven children. My oldest is in college. So obviously you hit those high school and college years and you start to really wonder about, you know, I've done all these things. Will my child continue to practice the faith? And as we looked at all these factors and we layer them on, what we saw is that even when you stack all of them up, so you have people who say they went to Mass every week with their parents as children, both their mother and their father was there. They list their mother and father as key religious influences. They say that their family said grace and said the rosary and read the Bible and did volunteering and went to confession, Eucharistic adoration, kind of all these things. You stack all those up and you still see that only about 80% of the people whose families were that active are saying that they're still Catholic. So, I mean, one out of five are falling away across this culture. I think it shows the struggles that are out there. Now, when you talk about people falling away, some of those are becoming Protestant. Some of them don't have any particular faith at all. We did have a question about if you stopped going to Mass. If you stopped going to Mass for more than a year at some point in your life, why did you do it? And the most common answers, this kind of surprised me, were very practical. The most common answer was that they moved away from the church they were going to before and they had trouble finding a new one they liked. And the next most common was they moved away from their family. And then the third most common was I had things that changed in my life that made it harder to make it to church. So you have to go down to the fourth reason before you get what's kind of a theological reason, which is I didn't feel like going to Mass was very important. And so it did really strike me that sometimes it's these little things that first pull people away. And then I think it very much becomes a question of, is there that hook that will allow you to be pulled back, whether it's family, whether it's friends, whether it's a spouse, whether it's something you read, is there something that's going to pull you back in, or is that time going to stretch longer and longer? Because what we did see that tended to keep people away is that there were fewer people who gave a theological reason for not going to Mass, but those people did not tend to come back. So if people said, I didn't believe that going to Mass was important, my beliefs about God changed, or I felt, I suppose this is sort of more moral, but I felt that my religious leaders were not living up to their faith. Those were the people who were not coming back.
Yeah, I was curious about that because, you know, the church scandal, you know, it has taken place. And, you know, of course, we're dealing with the ripple effect of ramifications of that, although the church has taken very stringent measures to make sure something like that never happens again. But the media also vilifies priests and the Catholic Church. And I'm just curious how much of an effect that has had on people leaving. I mean, to me, that's now in the rearview mirror, but maybe for a lot of people it's not. Has the church lost its moral authority? That's why people end up leaving it? I mean, there's confusion over a lot of issues, too, sexual issues in our day, too. I mean, people's attitudes have radically changed towards marriage and homosexuality and a lot of other things that the church used to be the moral voice on. And it seems that the cultural voice today is almost being heard a little louder. But your thoughts, I'd love to know what you found or if the data reveals anything.
Yeah, so I think one piece we saw is that when we asked people, you know, what are those reasons for leaving church? Some of them did seem like they touched on these questions of trust. So like 11% said, I felt my church or religious leaders were not living up to their beliefs. And I think that touches on kind of a set of moral questions there of not trusting people. At the same time, and this is actually in our piece that we'll run on Friday, we asked some really straight up questions about, do you trust your pastor? Do you trust your bishop? Do you trust the U.S. bishops? And the thing that was kind of surprising is that, you know, when you listen to what's in the media and you listen to, even among like Catholics talking about their concerns, you could get the impression that people really do not trust our Catholic leaders. But whether it was trusting your pastor, trusting the U.S. bishops, trusting your own bishop, trusting Pope Francis, we found that among Catholics who go to Mass, over 80% say that they trust all of those leadership figures. And I mean, it was slight variation from one to another, but it's very high. And then with people who were raised Catholic but do not go to Mass, about 50% say that they trust those figures, and most of the rest say they don't know. So the percent that say that they actively don't trust their pastor, don't trust their bishop, down around 10%. And that honestly was, it sounds bad to say this, it was shocking to me because we hear so much bad news, it's easy to become cynical. And yet this suggested to me there's actually a lot of trust still out there if people can just be invited to church and invited to participate more deeply in their faith.
That's really well said. My guest, Brendan Hodges, we're talking about a new report, a series of these that are coming out from The Pillar. You can check them out at pillarcatholic.com. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, if you want to get in, if you got a question, you want to share your own experience, you want to join the conversation, the number here is 888-914-9149. Love to talk with you. My producer, Maggie, she had left the church for a period of time. She was away for a couple of years. And you hear part of her story as well. So stay with us. We'll talk a little bit more right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Nietzsche, of course, announced famously in the late 1800s that God was dead, and the typical rationalist atheist regards that as a triumphalist proclamation. But that wasn't that for Nietzsche, and Nietzsche knew perfectly well and said immediately afterward that the consequences of that was going to be bloody catastrophe, because everything was going to fall. And he predicted the rise of communism, for example, and the deaths of tens of millions of people in the aftermath of the death of God. Because Nietzsche knew perfectly well that when you pull the cornerstone out from underneath a building, that even though it may stay aloft in midair like a cartoon character that's wandered off a cliff for some period of time, that it will inevitably crumble and that it will be replaced by something that's perhaps far worse.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was, again, the brilliant Dr. Peterson discussing how the removal of religious structures in society destabilizes the very foundation that we exist on. And he was quoting Nietzsche and on the death of God. It's good to be with you today. I'm a Catholic. I love my faith. I don't know what faith you are. I know that many tune into this broadcast, and you're not Catholic, and I welcome you here. I think there are moral truths that we can all agree on. I'm taking a look at where we are, though, also today as a society. Where are we in terms of our relationship to God, to organized religion? And as a Catholic, there's a website I want you to get you plugged into. And whether you're not Catholic or not, you should take a look at the data that comes out of this study that's been done. They're doing a series, The Pillar is the name of the organization. They're doing a series of special reports this week. And I think they're revealing. They're doing a survey on religious attitudes and practices. And it was a scientifically conducted poll. They looked at Catholics and once Catholics and non-Catholics and They took a look at America. There was an oversampling of Catholics, but it gives you a very clear, very accurate window into what's going on. And they ask questions about everything from religious beliefs to affiliation to attitudes. I mean, it's well worth the read. And I'm invited to the program today, Brendan Hodge. He was the one who was a contributing editor not only to The Pillar, but was responsible for the study. And their website, by the way, pillarcatholic.com. So if you want to join us, feel free to do that. You could dial in here. We're talking about all aspects of this. And, Brendan, it's good to have you back. There's so much to talk about and to drill into. But one of the things I was sitting here as the commercial was just playing, I was thinking to myself, you know, when you do a study, quite often there are surprises. What was the most interesting finding of the study, or what surprised you most out of all the data that you were able to dig up?
So I think one of the things that surprised me most is we knew going into this that we wanted to try to understand the nuns better. I'm a fan of Bishop Barron. I think he's done a lot of good talking about the need to evangelize this group, which is growing in our society. I mean, this increasing number of people who say that they have no religion in particular, and that for people born since 1990, that's 20% of Americans born since 1990 say that they have no religion at all. I had had sort of in my head a vision of who I thought this was. I pictured kind of a overeducated, big city, affluent, hipster with pets and no kids. The picture that emerged from our study was different in some key ways. And it really fascinated me. I actually contacted a couple of sociologists about our results to kind of run this by them and see, is this right? We cross-referenced with some other studies, and it did prove out. But so the things that struck me are when you talk about people who are so disaffiliated from religion that they don't call themselves a member of any religion, but they also don't call themselves agnostics or atheists. Yeah. It turns out that these are people who are disconnected from a lot of aspects of society. So what we found out is that they are actually less educated. Only 20% of nuns have a college degree, as compared to 48% of people who are religious. And a similar percent of agnostics and atheists. So they're less educated. They make less money. They're less likely to have children. They're less likely to be married. They're more ethnic minorities among them. So it's a very different image than I'd had of this kind of overeducated, too smart for himself hipster that I had in my head. And it struck me that as you look at this, this really is kind of what the Pope talks about with going to the margins. These are people who have become alienated from everything.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's grab a few phone calls. I know a lot of people are waiting to join you. And let's start with Jeff. He's listening in Central Valley, California. Jeff, good afternoon. Thanks for dialing in.
Hi, Drew. It's good to talk with you. I just stepped onto this program as I was driving, and I couldn't help but being moved to make a comment about, you know, what's missing in our formation and in our church is our connection with Mary and her connection with salvation. And for me, that has been the foundation, my bridge. It's been that for my boys. She's just been indispensable. And I think that that's missing.
I think it's a wonderful, wonderful point, Jeff. And Maggie, let me bring you in on Jeff's point here, the role of Our Lady. Was it Our Lady that brought you back? Because you left the church for a period of time. You were raised, your mother's a very good Catholic. What made you leave? And was it Our Lady that brought you back?
Well, I mean, it was a long journey. I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin, and when I went to college, actually, the way Brendan kind of describes, the big city, overeducated, it seemed like when I went to school in Minneapolis, I was kind of surrounded by that type, and I was in the liberal arts, so it was... there was a new mentality that was surrounding me. And at some point I started to question myself and my sanity and my beliefs, like, you know, am I stupid for believing this? And you know, all these things start to get thrown in your face about, you know, abuse scandals, and flaws within the church. And I fell away from the church for a couple of years, and I think my journey back really did have a lot to do with Mary. But I think it stemmed from learning to also learn to love and accept myself. The church is flawed, just like we are flawed. You can highlight all of those sins if you want, or you can pay attention in the Mass when they say, look not on our sins, but on the faith of your church. And if you focus on that faith, it overcomes anything. So it's just learning to retrain your brain to stop focusing so much on the negative and to look forward with the positive. Mary, praying the rosary definitely had a huge impact on that journey for me.
Yeah. Thank you, Maggie. And let me bring you back in, Brendan, to respond to Jeff and to Maggie. You heard her conversion back. Point one, let's talk to Jeff's point, the vital role of Our Lady in helping us form a strong foundation of faith. I don't know whether, you know, that came up in your study at all, but if it has, I'd love to get that. And then I'm also curious, after hearing Maggie come and go, is there a fluidity between the denominations? Do people go from one denomination to another to another? How many of them come back? So a couple things there for you.
Yeah. So I think in some ways you kind of bump up against the limits of a study, and that something like a devotion is kind of hard to pin down in some ways. Though I would say that in terms of things that kind of keep people connected with the faith, we did see a strong connection between saying the rosary and how regularly people say the rosary and how likely they are to remain Catholic. So that, I mean, it's one of several elements of practice that tie people very close to their faith, but it's one of those things that people can do every day. And when we looked at the kinds of devotions that people could do every day, that was one of the most frequent daily devotions of Catholics, and it did seem like it really tied people tight. In terms of Mary, that's the main thing that would occur to me. In terms of kind of this fluidity, one thing we did not unfortunately capture is kind of that sequencing that you're talking about, of people spending time in different faiths and maybe going away from the faith entirely and then perhaps going to a Bible church for a bit and then coming back to Catholicism. I know that's a path that several members of my extended family have followed, so it's a very familiar one. But what we did see is that a lot of people, sort of as we catch them at this moment when they take the survey, have moved from one faith to another. So the largest number of people who converted to Catholicism came from Bible Christianity. The largest number of Catholics who went somewhere else went to Bible Christianity. So you kind of have this back and forth. And we did also see that a large number of people who are now actively practicing their Catholic faith and going to Mass weekly and following other devotions say that at some point in their life, they spent at least a year away from the faith before coming back.
All right, we'll move along because a few minutes left here. If you want to get in, 888-914-9149. William's listening in Warwick, Rhode Island. Hi, William. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Thanks for taking the call. I appreciate Jeff and Marge's comments. And, you know, I think something Marge said that I really liked here was people being alarmed at seeing sin in the church. It'd be like going into a hospital and being alarmed that you see sick people. That's why we're there, because we are sinners. But I had three thoughts on, you know, the numbers that were kind of being read out. One is, when we're talking about younger people, my generation, I was born in the 80s, we're the internet Google generation, and we've learned a high level of impatience because we have instant access to information, instant access to just about anything we want, including the things in our lives. And, you know, one of the things that I think sometimes other practitioners of different faiths offer is easier, quicker paths for people who are sort of impatient. The Catholic Church and some of the dogmas there force people to slow down and have patience, and I think there's a cultural thing there. Another point that I think contributes to all this is Americans are far more transient now than we have ever been in our history. It used to be that you'd get a job, you work a career in the same town, and there was consistency. It was maybe the same town that you grew up in. Now people move way more times, five, six, seven times in pursuit of a career. And each time, it requires a revisit of, do I still want to do this? Finding a church, do I stick with the church? Do I try a different church? And that lack of consistency disrupts what otherwise might be a continuation in a faith. And the last thing I wanted to point out was something that's already been talked to a little bit, the media and discourse in this country. It's long been practice and tradition to mock Christians and Christianity, but the level of discourse has devolved to a point where people are no longer trying to figure out what's true. They're just going to easy answers. And I think that contributes very heavily to people walking away from faith altogether, because they're captured by a soundbite or a fragment, and they feel compelled and convinced by it because they don't know what true discourse actually is.
Hey, William, great points and excellent insights. Brendan, I'll let you respond to him as well. I think those points, you could expand on all of those. I don't know if the study has underlined or reflected anything that he pointed out, but I think from relocating and being transitory to the instant gratification culture we're in, whether it's Google and Facebook to Amazon, there are a lot of different challenges, but I'll let you respond.
Yeah, so I think the point about our transient culture is really important. When we ask people for reasons why they first stopped going to church, if they had been away from the church for a time, what we found is that if you put together people moving away from the church they've been attending and people who stopped because they moved away from their family, 37% of people who stopped going to church did so because they moved. So it's a really common experience for Americans that they're moving to a new part of the country, they break all their habits. And I think something I maybe hadn't appreciated enough, because as you get kind of further and further into kind of Catholic apologetics and discourse and so on, you get really focused on doctrines. And I think something that really jumped out for me here is the importance of practice. And so when people break their practices, they stop going for a while, it creates a break which can just kind of expand out and out. And that's one of the ways in which the culture just kind of sucks us away.
Hey, let me follow up on that, because I thought William was on point on that. COVID, did that have is that a short-term impact or a long-term impact of people forming those bad habits? William pointed out you relocate, you re-question, hey, do I want to go to this church? Do I want to go to church at all? What has COVID done once? Because I've seen several people I know, because of the lockdown, they'd go to Mass every Sunday. They no longer go. They got out of the habit of it, and now they just don't go. What role did the pandemic play in these numbers?
So we do actually have a piece specifically on the impact of the pandemic that'll be running tomorrow. So if you want to read a bunch more about that, I'd encourage you to take a look. So that the headline on that, when we looked at the number of people who went to Mass weekly or more before the pandemic, and then since the pandemic, even when we include like using video streaming and so on, if you're feeling sick in your homes, you're going to watch video Mass. 14% less people are participating in Mass now than they were before the pandemic. So that's a pretty big drop in the number of people who were attending Mass.
Well, so, you know, before time gets by too, people want to check, and this is a series of reports that you're doing, and there's different aspects to what has been a very comprehensive study. What's the best way to get plugged into it? How do they follow this? How do they read what's already been done? Because I do think it's very telling.
Yeah, so all of these reports are on the Pillar. That's at pillarcatholic.com. We are a Substack-driven website, so if you want to get on there and sign up, it is free to get the newsletters delivered to your inbox, if that's a convenient way to do it. So you can subscribe, and you'll get all of our updates. And we're running one article a day throughout this week. So we started with kind of the overview. We looked at why people left the church. Today we talked about the nuns. Tomorrow we're going to talk about COVID. And then in the last one, we'll be talking about kind of some of the hot button Catholic topics in the news that probably will be being discussed at the bishops' meeting next week.
That sounds great. We'll probably have to revisit more of it. I have to take a short pause. When we come back, Tom, Martha, everybody else, I'll do my best to get you on the air. Final segment of the Drew Mariani Show, straight ahead. If you want to get in, there is a line now open at 888-914-9149, taking a look at the state of Catholics in America today, and I'll tell you what, the data is revealing. Our discussion continues with more right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
I ended up falling into the wrong crowd.
Have you been away from the faith for a long time?
I've started listening to Relevant Radio.
You're welcome here.
I believe God is forming you.
The Drew Mariani Show is live and here for you now.
God can use you wherever you are.
On Relevant Radio.
Stumbling across the channels and found this one. All I right. decided to call.
It's like the prize, sunrise, waiting on the other side of the dark.
Yeah, it's so good to be with you today, boy. I wish I had, another couple hours to hang out with you, but time goes so quickly in the broadcast. If you're just joining me, let me just turn on the radio. Let me tell you what's happening here. There's a very revealing, very informative new study that has come out, and it's taking a look at our nation. And we are a country right now in the midst of a major religious flux. It's already well known that a growing number of Americans say that they have, no religious affiliation. But far less appreciated is the fact that only 35% of Americans attend religious service on a weekly basis. About 28% of Americans say that they have, they have a different religious identity than the one in which they were raised. That's a big number, 28%, right? So while American ties to institutional religion we see weakening, religious belief itself remains pretty common. 52% of Americans agreed with a statement done by the Pillar that Jesus suffered, died, and redeemed us of our sins. And that's just some of the things they looked at. The findings and the results can be found at the Pillar, and that's pillarcatholic.com if you want to go look at it. They did a survey on religious attitudes and practices, and all throughout the week they're going to be revealing more of their findings, and I find it telling. Tomorrow they're doing a piece on the pandemic, the impact of it on faith. And I've seen the impact of it on the faith of a lot of people. But as I said, I only have a few moments. Let me respect your time and jump right into the calls with Brendan Hodge. He was responsible for the study. And Brendan, let's go to Pittsburgh this time. Martha has a comment for you. Martha, good afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you. Great show.
Thanks.
Pope Benedict summed it up. And he gives Pope Benedict, I think he's a saint prophet of his time. Pope Benedict is going to get on as a saint. He predicted years before he was pope, there's too much filth in this church. And this is for cafeteria Catholics, the cafeteria is closed. He also said our church is going to become a smaller but stronger church. And are we not seeing that right now? I go to a scripture Bible study class at a Catholic church, my parish, and there are women in the group that are wishy-washy Catholics that don't even believe in some of the doctrine, that don't even get it, that the real presence is only in our Catholic church and some of the Orthodox. They don't get it, and they're like, they're not even really Catholic. So I see it all around me, and Pope Benedict's prediction is coming true. I believe this is our hope, and we must just remain faithful. And that's
all right. I love it, Martha. Let me hold you on that point, and let's talk about this with Brendan. A remnant church. What do you see happening in the coming years? I personally have a little bit of a different perspective. I tend to think the church is going to grow more robust because I do think, 2-3% of Catholics don't believe in the true presence. I think that number is going to diminish with the campaign the bishops are going to have underway. And I think we need to do better catechesis, better evangelization. We need to rekindle faith in the Eucharist. Relevant Radio is an extension of that evangelization. The Pillar is doing the same thing. So I'm curious, Martha made a great point and, of course, articulated what Benedict XVI said. What do you see coming and, what are the signposts? How are you reading the winds?
So I think there's a sense in which both are true here, in that what we're seeing is that the percentage of Americans who say that they are Catholic is going down. In younger generations, there are fewer Catholics. They're the smallest number of Catholics among people who were born since 1990. So those youngest adults are the least likely to be Catholic. At the same time, among those youngest adults, the ones who do still call themselves Catholic are actually more likely to practice their faith actively than older self-identified Catholics. So what we're seeing is that it's all one way or the other. What we're not seeing so much are the cultural Catholics who never practice their faith, but still call themselves Catholic. And it's going to become, are you caring about your faith and learning about your faith, or are you just completely gone? And then it becomes an evangelical task to reach out to the rest of the world.
Yeah. All right. Well said. We'll move along. We'll go to, is it Gabby in Boston? Who's up next, guys? Help me out here. Okay, Gabby. Gabby, good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
Two-part comment. One, about the presence of the Eucharist. I will tell you that I did have a new pastor in my parish that I was questioning some things he was doing, like kneeling in front of his chair and the tabernacle's over to the left, and just different very odd, strange things. The long stress, you know, during the consecration, just kind of whoop, whoop, you know, with up and down with the Eucharist. The bells couldn't even ring because he did it so fast. The point is, I happened to see a bishop that was from a different state one time, and I went up to him. He was so holy, the way he was saying Mass and whatnot. And I went up to him afterwards, and I said, Bishop, if you could help me out with this, I have a question. I said, I have this new priest, and I'm really questioning what he's doing. This is what he's doing, some things that really I'm part of our Mass. And then he said, well, what is he doing? I said, well, I don't know. It's like he went to kneel in front of his chair, and there's nothing in back of there. And he was very disturbed by that. And I said, yeah, I don't know. He said, and he asked me a few questions, and I said, no. I said, no. But the point is, he said to me, there are some seminaries that aren't teaching them wrong, like that the presence of God isn't present in the Eucharist. He goes, that he believed was going on. Yeah. The other thing that had nothing to do with this, something totally different, was that I taught CCD information years ago, and I taught to kids that were in a Catholic school all their life. There was, and I will say, when they were in 10th grade, and when I
Gab, you got to speed up your point.
Okay.
I have a few moments left.
No, that's okay. The point is, when I started this one class, I asked where everyone basically was in their journey with God, and one of the kids said that he questioned the existence of God, but he had gone to Catholic school for 10 years. So I asked him. So the point is, what I'm trying to say is, I feel as though that it's more about building a relationship with God, and that has to be instilled more in the children than learning the facts about the faith, all right, which is good too.
Great, Gabby. I'm going to hold you on that point. I'm grateful for your call. Thank you. I think I got what you were saying. And Brendan, let's pick it up on the two points she brought up there. I think there was some bad catechesis. You know, I think sometimes kids leave the church maybe not knowing what was taught to them as well. I had a friend that I went to Catholic school with. We both had the same education. I believe Jesus was truly present in it, and he thought it was a symbol. So, you know, personal relationship is important. I think clear teaching is important for the kids. In terms of seminaries, I think they've gotten better, too. I think there was a time where some liberalism and some wacky teaching was in there. What are you seeing in general? I mean, is that an anomaly? Is that still present? I mean, where are we in terms of both catechesis for the laity and the orthodoxy that we're getting out of our seminaries?
I think it's hard to discern that very clearly among kind of the younger Catholics versus the older ones. I do think the encouraging sign is that among those who are still calling themselves Catholic, who are younger, who are in their 20s and 30s, they are more likely to go to Mass and than some older people who still describe themselves as Catholic. In terms of actual beliefs, I think this would kind of point towards we still maybe have not reached the level of catechesis that we may have had back in the 40s and 50s, because just in terms of what people said they agreed with, we're not back. The oldest generations of Catholics are the ones who kind of check the right boxes, if you will. Right. So I think it would point towards the relationship is becoming stronger, but the doctrine still needs some work.
All right. Sam is listening in Athens, Georgia. Sam, I only got about a minute at the very most, so I'm going to let you share your thought very quickly. All right, Sam, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put you on hold, okay, because you're not there and I'm up against the clock. So I want to thank you all, everyone on hold. I apologize if I did not get to you. If you just tuned in, we were taking a look at the state of Catholics in America. There's an in-depth study done by The Pillar, and that is yours. If you simply go to pillarcatholic.com, you can see some of the initial writing that's been done. There's a whole series that's going to be revealed in the coming days. And Brendan, I would thank you for your time. Thank you for your hard work. I think it's very telling. And I look forward to seeing what you report on in the days ahead. So we'll have to catch back up again, okay?
Thank you. It was great to be on the show.
Thank you. That's Brendan Hodges. And I am out of time for the day. I apologize. Like I said, I wish I had more time with you. Thanks for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. Don't forget the Rosary Across America tonight, the final day of our 9-day novena for the souls in purgatory. It's not too late to get your names in. You can go to relevantradio.com/souls and pray for that loved one. You have that rosary offered for them tonight. And of course, you can join Father Rocky for that. I'll be back again tomorrow. Looking forward to talking to you then. Kel Clark is coming up now, so stay tuned. Until our paths again cross, remember God loves you, and so do I. Have a nice night.